Hello and welcome to the reading of the Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, May 24th. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. And the weather outlook today, it's going to be mostly sunny and breezy, and it's going to be a high of 78. So get out there, enjoy the weather. Okay, let's take a look at the front page here of the paper. It says, ex-local priest faces accusation. The Reverend Lee O'Reilly is accused of sexually abusing a minor while serving at Resurrection in 1985 through 1986. Archdiocese Dubuque officials said Tuesday that a former Dubuque priest has been accused of sexually abusing a minor in the 1980s. The Reverend Lee O'Reilly is accused of abuse stemming from 1985 to 1986 when he was an associate pastor at Church of the Resurrection, according to a press release issued on Tuesday by the Archdiocese. The release states that Riley is now an active priest of the Diocese of Venice, Florida. Riley is listed as pastor of San Antonio Parish, located in Port Charlotte, Florida, according to the Diocese of Venice website. Dubuque Archdiocese officials said that Riley has been placed on administrative leave for the duration of the investigation. Dubuque Archdiocese spokesman Deacon John Robbins said that the individual leveling the allegations against Riley notified church officials on the 5th of May. The Most Reverend Richard E. Pates, apostolic administrator of the Dubuque Archdiocese, has been in contact with the Most Reverend Frank J. Duane, the bishops of Venice, who placed Riley on administrative leave, according to the release. The Archdiocese of Dubuque Review Board of the Protection of Minors launched the investigation. There really isn't a timetable for the completion of the investigation, Robin said. Each case has its own unique circumstances. Church officials said that the investigation into the allegation will follow protocols outlined by the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People, a comprehensive set of procedures established by U.S. Catholic bishops more than 20 years ago. Each case has to be handled by the Charter and our own archdiocesan policies, Robbins went on to say. Child care laws spurs optimism. Area providers express some hope that a new Iowa law will increase access by raising the income threshold to quality for assistance. Dubuque County child care providers and economic development officials said that an Iowa law recently signed by Governor Kim Reynolds could lead to measurable improvements in child care access. The law, passed by the Iowa legislature this year, raises the threshold for income families can earn and still qualify for state child care tuition assistance, while also increasing the number of hours recipients must work or go to school each week to be eligible. It also posts the reimbursement rate for child care providers who take care of children, of parents who receive the state assistance. And, Nick Hulkenberry, director of the Workforce Programming for Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, said that the law will improve the child care landscape in the area to some degree. More working families will be able to have access to this support, this incentive to get their kids in child care, he said. We know the cost of child care is one of the two top barriers to workforce in our market. I think it's not a transformative change. It's not going to fix all the issues, but it's definitely not a bad thing. Deb McDonald, a co-director at Young'uns Preschool and Child Care Center in Dubuque, said that she and her staff spent Tuesday holding graduations for classes of preschool students. She said that the new law and its eligibility changes will be a significant improvement for the area's workforce. It's definitely a way to get people back to work and make sure that they're contributing more, McDonald said. If we can cover more families, the more the better, because a lot of people fall into that middle category where they can't both get out of debt and also pay for child care. Owners plan to sell Jack's Chicken Palace. The University Avenue restaurant has been a fixture since 1962. The longtime owners of the Dubuque restaurant are planning to retire and seek new owners for the more than 60-year-old business. Jeff and Linda Field, co-owners of Jack's Chicken Palace at 1107 University Avenue, have placed the business up for sale with local real estate agency Kirby Realty, though both owners emphasized that the restaurant will remain open during the search for a new owner. All right, let's keep moving on here. Let's see what else is going on here in the paper. We're going to go now into the Dubuque and Tri-State section of the paper here. News in brief. Site work begins on the 5th of June on old highway road bridge replacement. Site works for a bridge replacement project will close a portion of a busy Dubuque County road next month. About 1,140 feet of old highway road between Sepal and Sundown Roads will be closed beginning the 5th of June for site work related to a bridge replacement project, according to the Dubuque County Road Department. A press release states that the work is expected to take 1 or 2 weeks. Motorists will follow a signed detour in the area. The site work will prepare the area for the $1.4 million replacement of the bridge on Old Highway Road over a railway just west of the intersection with Sepal. That project is expected to begin in mid-June. The road will be closed at the location of the bridge for the approximately 5-month duration of the project. Northwest arterial construction to affect intersection traffic. A construction project on a major Dubuque road will shift traffic at West End intersection for the next week. Traffic will shift at the intersection of Northwest Arterial and Plaza Drive around midday today to accommodate improvements along the arterial, a press release states. The traffic pattern shift will remain in place for about a week, officials say. Preschool favorite to appear in live show this fall in Dubuque. A live show featuring a pop star preschool educational character will appear this fall in Dubuque. Blippi, the Wonderful World Tour, will appear on the 9th of November at Five Flags Center, according to a press release from the venue. The release states that Blippi, along with his best friend Mika, inspires curiosity in preschoolers around the world by creating content and experiences that are relatable, accessible, and make learning fun. City of Dubuque announces closure service changes due to Memorial Day. The City of Dubuque has announced closures and service changes related to the upcoming Memorial Day holiday. City officials will be closed. City offices, rather, will be closed on Monday, the 29th of May, according to a press release. And there'll be no trash, yard debris, or curbside recycling collections on Monday. Those collections will occur instead on Saturday, the 27th of May. The Dubuque landfill site also will be closed on Monday. Man sentenced for crossbow shooting in Galena. In Galena, Illinois, a man has been sentenced to 180 days in jail and 3 months of probation for shooting another man with a crossbow in Galena. Ronald A. Smith, age 36, was recently given the sentence in Joe Davis County Circuit Court after previously entering a blind plea of guilty to charge of aggravated battery. 2 counts of attempted murder and 1 additional count of aggravated battery were dismissed. Online court records state that Smith will receive 31 days of credit for time served to go toward his jail sentence. He must also pay a $5,000 fine and $4,225 in restitution. Judge Kevin Ward ordered the sentence. The charge relates to the crossbow shooting of Michael Rolich of Galena. A previous press release states that Smith lived in Galena until April 2022, when a domestic violence incident occurred between him and his estranged wife. On the 22nd of June, Smith's wife and her friend Rolich were sitting on the deck of her residence when Smith appeared around the corner of the house armed with a crossbow, the release states. As Rolich and the female subject attempted to flee, Smith allegedly shot Rolich in the back with the crossbow, causing the arrow to become lodged in Rolich's torso, the release states. Rolex fled the scene through the woods until reaching Park Avenue in Galena, where Rolex attempted to make contact with residents by knocking on doors. Rolex was able to make contact with a resident who called 911. Court documents state that the tip of the arrow was lodged internally near Rolex's right lung. He later had surgery to remove the projectile. Smith fled the scene, but his wife identified him as the shooter. Law enforcement personnel used two canine units to search for Smith, and a crossbow and duffel bag were both found in the woods. Smith's father drove Smith to the sheriff's department on the 23rd of June and reported that his son confessed to the shooting, documents go on to say. Okay. DRA okays grant for parade and fireworks. The nonprofit license holder for Dubuque's casinos on Tuesday awarded two grants to local organizations and took further steps for further development at Chaplain Schmidt Island. Board members of the DRA approved two core grants at their monthly meeting at Q Casino, $10,872 Veterans Freedom Center and $20,000 to Dubuque JCs. The grant to Veterans Freedom Center will fund upcoming events on Memorial Day, including the return of a parade. The Memorial Day parade is put on through a collaboration of local veteran groups throughout the tri-state area, said Kathy Buer, DRA Director of Strategic Philanthropy and Schmidt Island Development. After a three-year hiatus, the parade is relocating at Schmidt Island. The parade will start at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, May 29th, in the Q Casino parking lot and end at Veterans Memorial Plaza. A short program and cookout will follow. The events are free to attend. Okay, let's see what else we have going on here in the paper. Excuse me. Oh, yes, we need to get to the opinion section of the paper. There's a cartoon, a political cartoon, and DeSantis is talking to his wife. They're both they've just gotten into bed for the night, and he says, "I had a nightmare that voters thought it would be funny to write in Mickey Mouse," and she says, "But Ron, that happens every election," and he says, "Yeah, but this time he won." Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, what else do we have here? This is written by Tim Trinkle for the Telegraph Herald. And this is the other view section of the paper. Old Jim remembered when Phil Roof cut his chair in the little alcove barbershop on Elm Street. The shop was the size of a small living room, but it held a warm view of the street, and the traffic count was high. The barber's pole set to the right of the front door. It spun like a star cluster for years to attract the men of the pack, the great meatpacking plant a block east. Phil Roof supported a big family for years on that income, Jim said. He must have given his business to the new man at Cadillac Cuts. The current barber drove an hour from Cedar Rapids to accommodate his clientele in Dubuque. "Looked like a good place to give it a try," he'd said. The shop was built in an old home. The north window was stenciled, "Barber Shop." Across from the barber in an empty lot, hid behind a fence of tall, curved, silver tin sheets, hills of junked, rusty automobile fenders, stoves, refrigerators, air conditioner holes were piled behind the fence. The old man wanted to meet the new barber, among the first to do. He was 80 years old. Sometime he wore a line of white whiskers on his lip so that it was a shadow, an alliance with the jazz age. The old man was curious. He said he'd spread the word. "Yeah, I'm going down there and see what's what." He parked in front of the shop at Make a Cooper named Cadillac Cuds. One old gnarled tree shaded the place where the old man parked. The smells of fresh talc and light fume of alcohol seeped across the room. Makeout Cooper was a wide-shouldered man with a round face, and he smiled easily. No cussing, no smoking, and if you want your hair cut, you better be on time, because it's my time and I won't tolerate disrespect, Cooper said. On summer day, Meka taped a paper sheet to the window for each customer to see. If you can't be on time, I can't help you, period. The barber and the old man fit like keys on a piano. Just thought I'd give you a try, Jim said. I was raised a few blocks from here, you know. Well, welcome, Micah said. It's a blessing to have you here. The old man was born 2 weeks before the great stock market crash of October 1929. That year, Calvin Coolidge was president and the first car radio broadcast news. The old man wore suits on Sundays. He was an altar boy. His mother told her son, it doesn't hurt to be nice to everyone. When Micah asked him up to the chair, waving the barber's sheet, the old man grinned like a boy. You want me to take your hair down, but you can still comb it across like you have it? Too late to change now, the old man laughed. Good place to grow up, Jim said. They talked about the Chicago White Sox and the neighborhood. I've been going to the same barber for as long as you've been alive, but I wanted to meet you, he said. Yeah, you're a good man. While the thin white wisps of hair fell to the tiled floor, the two allies stared at the traffic. At last, the old man told the story. He said when he was a boy, he and a group of his classmates hopped the slow-moving train across the street. They picked coal chips from the slow cars and tossed them to the ground. We carried those lumps of coal to our homes for heat, big black shards of coal, because we were poor and there wasn't enough work. It was a hard time. I know about that, Micah Cooper said. Yeah, I know all about that. I know you do, said the old man. I know you do. Anyway, Trekkie is a community college teacher, a resident of Dubuque, and the author of two books about Dubuque. All right, let's move on here. Let's take a look now at another section here. We're continuing on the Tri-State News section of the paper here. New property tax exemption for Iowa seniors is now available. Older adults in Idaho, who own their homes now can apply for an additional tax exemption on their 2024 tax bill. Residents age 65 and older, as of January 1st, can apply to have the taxable value of their home reduced by $3,250 on their 2023 valuation, which affects taxes due beginning September 2024, according to a press release from the Dubuque City Assessor Troy Patzner. To qualify for the exemption, residents must file forms with the assessor's office by the 1st of July. For taxes due in 2025, the exemption is set to increase to $6,500 taxable valuation. The new exemption was passed in May by the Iowa legislature as part of a sweeping property tax reform meant to keep climbing home assessments across Iowa from turning into higher tax bills. The exemption is expected to serve as an additional stopgap against higher taxes for older residents on limited or fixed incomes. Our life expectancy is a lot longer now, said Northeast Iowa Area Agency on Aging Regional Director Stacy Spears. It's very possible someone owns their home but is having difficulty making ends meet. Officials said that anyone eligible for the exemption should apply soon, as the turnaround for residents to apply for the exemption on their 2024 taxes is tight. Batzner also said that the forms to apply for the exemption arrived at the assessor's office last week, and the state did not extend the typical homestead exemption application deadline past the 1st of July. I thought they would have waited until August or December, Batzner said, but they made it a pretty short window to sign up for the exemption. Batzner estimated that the senior tax exemption was applied in the same manner as the state homestead tax credit on this year's tax bill. The average city resident would save $100 on top of the $144 they already save from the homestead tax credit. Let's take a look at news briefs now. Authorities: man arrested on 6th OWI offense in southwest Wisconsin. Authorities said that a man was charged with a 6th operating while intoxicated offense following a traffic stop in southwest Wisconsin. Isaac Blinken Arbogast, age 44, of Richard Center, Wisconsin, was arrested Saturday on a parole hold. And a charge of 6th offense operating while intoxicated, according to a press release from the Great County Sheriff's Department. The release states that the Sheriff's Department received a report of a crash at about 2:40 p.m. Saturday on Grant County T in Hickory Grove Township outside Boscobel. Shortly after, the department received a second call about the same vehicle being driven backwards down the road in both lanes of traffic. The vehicle was located by deputies on Zink Road in the opposite lane of traffic, with Blinken Arbogast driving, authorities said. Mr. Arbogast was heavily intoxicated, and field sobriety tests were administered, the release went on to say. Dubuque Regional Humane Society to host birthday bash on the 3rd of June. Dubuque Regional Humane Society will mark its 122 years in operation with an event next month. The organization is hosting a birthday bash from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. June 3rd at the Humane Society at 4242 Chavanel Road, according to an online announcement. The event will include carnival games and prizes, food trucks, birthday cake, bounce houses, a pet supply sale, and animals. Free screening of film on suicide prevention set for the 14th of June in Dubuque. A free screening of suicide prevention film will be held next month in Dubuque. Mental health agencies of Dubuque County will present a showing of My Ascension at 6 p.m. June 14th at the Clark University Atrium at 1550 Clark Drive. The film presents the story of Emma Benoit, who at age 16 attempted suicide. A question and answer session with Benoit will follow the screening. Grand opening for a new Epworth splash pad planned for Saturday. A grand opening for Epworth's new splash pad will take place this weekend. The event will be held at 10:45 a.m. on Saturday, the 27th of May, at the site of the splash pad in Tower Park. Fundraising efforts for the project began 2 years ago. In December of 2021, the splash pad was awarded $60,000 in state grant funding from the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Epworth Mayor Sandy Gassman said that the splash pad's features were put in place last week. "I just think that it's something good for the community," she said. "It gives the kids a place to go on a hot day, and it's another amenity for the community to have." Okay, let's keep moving on here. Okay, we are now in one of my favorite sections of the paper, and that is regarding lifestyle and food. Antipasto pasta salad, perfect for Memorial Day, or really any time. And a holiday weekend is coming up, folks. Memorial Day is rapidly approaching. Here's a quick and easy dinner for the weekend or any time. It's based on an antipasto platter that usually contains cured meats and olives, cheese, assorted pickles, and vegetables. Think of these ingredients. I created a quick and easy pasta salad. You can use other cured meats and vegetables that you like. Use this recipe as a guide for quantities. The salad can be made a day ahead. Refrigerate it and bring it to room temperature before serving. And by the way, this is written by Linda Gassenheimer from the Tribune News Service. Okay, let's see what we need to get here. You have to, let's see, antipasto salad serves two. You have a quarter of a pound of corkscrew pasta, about 1 1/4 cups. You have 1 1/2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1/2 tablespoon of balsamic vinegar, salt and freshly ground pepper, 1/4 pound sliced lean deli meat cut into 1/2-inch squares, 1/4 pound slice of reduced sodium smoked turkey breast cut into 1/2-inch squares, 1/4 cup of black pitted olives, about 6, 1 cup of sliced canned or jar roasted red peppers, 1/4 sliced pepperoni, 1 tomato cut into cubes, about 1 cup, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, and 2 tablespoons of fresh basil leaves. Now what you do is you bring the large saucepan 3/4 full in boiling water, adding the pasta about 8 minutes. Then you remove the 2 tablespoons of the pasta water to a large bowl. Add olive oil and balsamic vinegar and mix well. Drain the pasta and add to the bowl, and then add your salt and pepper to taste. Add the ham, the turkey, the olives, the roasted peppers, the pepperoni, and the tomatoes. Toss all of the ingredients together. Divide in half and spoon onto 2 dinner plates. Sprinkle the cheese and basil on top. Well, that's a simple thing to do and very tasty. And that's great on a really warm day during the summer. Here's another story regarding food. Honoring immigrants and their food in new PBS special. In New York, in her new PBS special, Lydia Bastianich samples the food of the world without ever crossing the U.S. border. The Emmy Award-winning TV host, author, and restaurateur explores the immigrant experience through food. In Lydia Celebrates America, Flavors That Define Us. It airs on the 30th of May on PBS, and also will stream starting that day on PBS.org and the PBS app. Bastianich visits a Bhutan refugee who has built a new life in Ohio, Cuban immigrants feeding people in Kentucky, Indian Americans creating businesses in California, and in Texas, she meets Afghan refugees helping new arrivals and a second generation of Vietnamese Americans who has multiple restaurants. There were a lot of interesting connections between the food and them and the new culture and me, Bastianich said. Food somehow opens the doors for me all the time. Bastianich also herself was a Cold War refugee who turned a knack for homestyle Italian cooking into an empire of restaurants, products, and media. I came here when I was 12 years old. A great opportunity was given to me and to my family. And I wanted to share that because sometimes I think that America is maligned. It's not appreciated the way I would like it, she said. In the special, Bastianich travels to both new and established immigrant communities and asks arrivals about their motivations and challenges and experiences. There is this tremendous difference of flavors, but there's a commonality of cooking, she says. Food is not threatening. Food is positive. In Reynoldsburg, Ohio, she meets the man from Bhutan who spent 18 years in a refugee camp in Nepal and was resettled in America, arriving with just $9. He landed on a Thursday and by Saturday morning was working at a 7-Eleven. He became a U.S. citizen and a city council member. America is all about immigrants. And as immigrants, we owe it to this country to give back, Bastianich says. Once we are comfortably set and we are given the opportunity we need, it's important to really become part of this and give back. In Louisville, Kentucky, she's fed and serenaded by Cuban immigrants, one of whom started as a waiter before opening a restaurant and his maxed out credit cards. In Bakersfield, California, she meets a community of Punjabis who have opened a roadside truck stop and others who are almond farmers and processors. Just amazing. That's what America's all about. As we come up to the halftime part of our program, I want to remind you that you are listening to Peter Welch here at IRIS. the Iowa Reading Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. This is Wednesday. It's the 24th of May, and the outlook for the weather is very pleasant today. Let's now take a look at the obituary news. We've got a bunch here. Helen Steele has passed at the age of 97 at her home with her family by her side. Visitation will be held on Friday, the 26th of May, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. in St. Columbkille Catholic Church. A mass of Christian burial will follow at 11 a.m. with David Schatz, the officiating, and MSGR Richard Funke celebrating. Private entombment will be in St. Joseph's Chapel Mausoleum at Mount Olivet Cemetery. And Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family with the arrangements. John F. Beechin, age 72, passed away, surrounded by his family. And the family will hold a celebration of life for John on the 29th of May from 1 to 4 p.m. at their home. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. And Sherry Stangey, age 68, has passed on the 18th of May, and funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, the 26th of May, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Cincinnati, Wisconsin, and Friar Wayne Drosler officiating. Military honors will be accorded at the church following the services. A private family burial will be held at a later date. And Patricia Ann Taylor, age 93, of Mount Carmel Bluffs, has passed. Visitation and committal for natural burial was on Monday, the 22nd of May, with burial in the Mount Carmel Cemetery. Sharing of memories will be Friday, the 26th of May at 9:30 a.m. in the Mary Frances Clark Chapel at Mount Carmel. And also, Nicole Hall has passed at the age of 39. A funeral service will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, May 27th, at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church at 2145 JFK Road in Dubuque, with Dr. Reverend Kincaid officiating. Burial will follow in Linwood Cemetery. Celebration of Nicole's life will follow the burial at the Eagles Club, Dubuque, from 1 to 4 p.m. And finally, Walter McLaughlin, age 62, has passed on the 21st of May, and visitation will be from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 25th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory at 2595 Rockdale Road. The funeral service will be at 11 a.m. On Friday, the 26th of May, at the funeral home. All right, let's see what else we've got going on here in the paper today. We were discussing some of the great food here in the paper. Let's take a look now at a very quick story here. This is called Lifestyle in Short. That's the column. Riverboat Lounge bartender named state's top mixologist. Carl Bush, the lead bartender at Hotel Julian Dubuque's Riverboat Lounge, was named the state's top mixologist at the annual Iowa Renters Restaurant Association's State Mixology Championships. Mixologists created cocktails for a panel of judges that were judged on taste, appearance, and overall creativity and personality. Bush competed against 10 other mixologists from all over the state to take the top prize. The event was held on the 4th at Smash Park in West Des Moines, Iowa. It's the third time that Bush has taken home the top prize. He also was named the state's best mixologist in 2013 and 2021. Riverboat Lounge is located at 200 Main Street and is open from 4 to 11 p.m. on Tuesday through Thursday and 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Friday, Saturday. The lounge is closed on Sunday and on Monday. Okay, oh, let's see what else we've got here going on here in the paper. Oh, yeah, we got to stop in here and read Michael Rosen's article. French fries bumming you out? They might be. Adele once said, my ideal meal, my death row meal, my last meal would be a McChicken nugget with a Big Mac and then fries. That love of fried foods may do more than affect her heart health. It may influence her lyrics. In her 2015 album, 25, she sang, I wish I could have a little more. Look up to the sky, not just the floor. I feel like my life is flashing by, and all I can do is watch and cry. A new study tracked more than 140,000 people over 11-plus years and found that frequent consumption of fried foods, especially fried potatoes, was linked with a 12% higher risk of anxiety and 7% higher risk of depression compared to folks who don't eat fried foods. What's the correlation? Well, high-temperature frying creates a chemical reaction between sugars and an amino acid called aspartame in plant-based foods. Now, the result is something called acrylamide, which is tied to inflammation of the brain and the brain's neurons, causing emotional distress. The Food and Drug Administration says it also may be associated with a risk of cancer and encourages companies to reduce its presence. But if you're a typical American eating 30 pounds of French fries annually and one of the 40 million with an anxiety disorder, or the 19 million who will experience depression this year, you can avoid acrylamide's risk. Ditch fried foods like chips, fries, and breaded fried chicken. You'll strengthen your immune system, reduce your risk for type 2 diabetes and obesity, and maybe, just maybe, you'll feel happier. Well, that makes a lot of sense, I think. Okay, let's keep moving here. Let's keep scrolling down. Okay, we're now in the record and nation and world section of the paper here today. Republicans decry Biden's lack of urgency on debt deal. Failure to strike a deal would be unprecedented and certain to throw financial markets into turmoil. In Washington, debt ceiling talks showed few signs of outward progress on Tuesday, as negotiators for President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy traded more budget-cutting ideas, but Republicans warned of a lack of urgency at the White House to resolve the standoff in time to avert a potentially chaotic federal default. With barely a week to go before a deadline as soon as the 1st of June, the Democratic president and the Republican speaker were staring down a financial crisis. Failure to strike a deal would be unprecedented and uncertain, and also certain to throw the U.S. financial markets into a turmoil, inflicting economic pain at home and abroad. Markets lowered Tuesday with a no deal in sight. We're not there yet, McCarthy said at the Capitol, reiterating he won't bring any bill forward that doesn't spend less than we spent this year. Behind closed doors, McCarthy urged his slim House Republican majority to just stick together despite their own factions as he negotiates the strongest deal possible for conservatives and lawmakers, saying, exiting the private session. But McCarthy did not expect a deal by day's end. He told reporters that the teams are eyeing creative ways of rolling back spending that all sides can accept. I believe we can still get there and get there before June 1st, McCarthy said, dragging into a third week the negotiations over raising the nation's debt limit, now at $31 trillion. We're never supposed to arrive at this point, a crisis in the making. From the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said it was ridiculous to suggest Biden wasn't acting with urgency. He wants to get this done as soon as possible, she says. The White House insisted early on that it was unwilling to barter over the need to pay the nation's bills, demanding that Congress simply lift the ceiling, as it has done many times before, with no strings attached. But the newly elected speaker urged the president at an Oval Office meeting in February to come to the negotiating table on a budget package that would reduce spending to reduce ballooning deficits in the post-COVID era in exchange for the vote to allow future debt, both men said after a crucial meeting late on Monday at the White House. After the president returned from the Group of Seven summit in Japan, that talks were productive. But with time short to strike a deal, frustrations emerged as negotiators labored to come up with a compromise that could be approved quickly by the Republican House and the Democratic Senate and be signed into law. Negotiations are focused on finding agreements over a 2024 budget year limit. Republicans have set aside their demand to roll back spending to 2022 levels, but say that next year's government spending must be less than it is now. But the White House instead is offering to freeze spending at current 2023 numbers. Agreement on that top line spending level is vital. It would enable McCarthy to deliver spending restraint for conservatives while not being so severe that it would chase off the Democratic votes that would be needed in the divided Congress to pass any bill. We are holding firm to the Speaker's red line, said a top Republican negotiator, Representative Garrett Graves of Louisiana, which is that we will not do a deal unless it spends less money than we're spending this year. A man arrested after a U-Haul truck crashes near the White House in Washington. A Missouri man flew to Washington, rented a U-Haul truck, and then drove straight to the White House, where he crashed the truck into a security barrier and began waving around a Nazi flag in the culmination of a six-month plan to seize power from the government, authorities said on Tuesday. Sai Kandula, age 19, removed the flag from a backpack shortly after smashing the box truck into the barrier near the north side of Lafayette Square on Monday around 10 p.m., according to charging documents. He was quickly arrested by a U.S. Park police officer who rushed to the scene of the crash and saw him take out the flag. Kandula later told Secret Service agents that he'd flown from St. Louis on a one-way ticket that night after months of planning. He wanted to get to the White House, seize power, and be put in charge of the nation. And he said he would kill the president if that's what I have to do, charges state. Kandula, who is from St. Louis suburb of Chesterfield, Missouri, said that he bought the flag online because he admires the Nazis' great history, as well as their authoritarian nature, eugenics, and their one world order. No one was injured in the crash. No explosives or weapons were found in the truck on Kandula. Kandula rented the U-Haul in Herndon, Virginia, and had a valid contract in his own name, the company said. People can rent a truck from U-Haul at age 18. And there were no red flags on his rental record that have prevented the contract, according to U-Haul. A witness, Chris Zaboji, said that the driver smashed into the barrier at least twice. Zaboji, a 25-year-old pilot who lives in Washington, was finishing a run close by Lafayette Square when he heard the loud crash of the U-Haul truck hitting the barrier. He said he took out his phone and captured the moment the truck struck the barrier again before he had heard sirens approaching. when the van backed up and rammed it again, I decided I wanted to get out of there, he said. Officers from the Secret Service and the Metropolitan Police Department searched the truck after the crash. Video posted by WUSA-TV shows a police officer at the scene picking up, inventorying several pieces of evidence from the truck, including the Nazi flag. Gandula was arrested on multiple charges, and prosecutors charged him with damaging U.S. property. Okay, what else do we have here going on in the paper? Surgeon General says that immediate action needed to keep kids safe on social media. The U.S. Surgeon General is warning there is not enough evidence to show that social media is safe for children and teens, and is calling on tech companies, parents, and caregivers to take immediate action to protect kids now. With young people, social media use near universal, but its true impact on mental health is not yet fully understood, says Dr. Murthy, who's asking tech companies to share data and increase transparency with researchers and the public and prioritize users' health and safety when designing their products. I recognize technology companies have taken steps to try to make their platforms healthier and safer, but it's simply not enough, Dr. Murthy told the Associated Press in the interview. You can just look at the age requirements where platforms have said 13 is the age at which people can start using their platforms. Yet 40% of the kids 8 through 12 are on social media. How does that happen if you're actually enforcing your policies? To comply with federal regulation, social media companies already ban kids under 13 from signing up to their platforms, but children have been shown to easily get around the bans, both with and without their parents' consent. Other measures social platforms have taken to address concerns about children's mental health are also easily circumvented. For instance, TikTok. TikTok recently introduced a default 60-minute time limit for users under age 18. But once the limit is reached, minors can simply enter a passcode to keep watching. It's not that the companies are unaware of the harm their platforms are causing. Meta, for instance, studied the effects of Instagram on teens' mental health years age and found that the peer pressure generated by the visually focused app led to mental health and body image problems, and in some cases, eating disorders and suicidal thoughts in teens, especially in girls. One internal study cited 13.5% of teen girls saying that Instagram makes thoughts of suicide worse, and 17% of the teen girls saying it makes eating disorders worse. The research was revealed in 2021 by whistleblower Frances Haugen. Meta sought to downplay the harmful effects of its platform on teens at the time. Now, but put on hold its work on kids' versions of Instagram, which the company says is meant mainly for tweens, and that's ages 10 to 12. The bottom line is that we do not have enough evidence to conclude that social media is, in fact, sufficiently safe for our kids. And that's really important for parents to know, said Dr. Murphy, who's been traveling around the country talking to parents and young people about youth mental health crisis. The most common question I get from parents is whether social media is safe for their kids. Policymakers need to address the harms of social media in the same way they regulate things like car seats and baby formula, medication, and other products children use, Murphy said in a report published Tuesday. Parents and kids simply can't do it all. We're asking parents to manage a technology that's rapidly evolving, that fundamentally changes how their kids think about themselves, how they build friendships, how they experience the world. And technology, by the way, that prior generations never had to manage, Murphy says. And we're putting all of that on the shoulders of parents, which is just simply not fair. Okay, let's keep moving along here in the nation's business here in the paper. Let's take a look now at an article regarding former President Trump. Trump makes video appearance in New York criminal case in New York. Donald Trump threw up his hands in frustration on Tuesday as a judge scheduled his criminal trial for the 25th of March, putting the former president and current candidate in a Manhattan courtroom in the heat of next year's presidential primary season. Trump, appearing by video conference at a pretrial hearing in the hush money case, glowered at the camera as Judge Juan Manuel Merchan advised him to cancel all other obligations for the duration of the trial, which could last several weeks. Trump, wearing a blue suit against a backdrop of American flags at his Florida estate, then turned to a lawyer by his side, their brief discussion inaudible on the video feed, before sitting with his arms folded for the remainder of the hearing. Trump said little during the hearing, but lashed out afterward on social media, writing, "Just had New York County Supreme Court hearing where I believe my First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, have been violated, and they forced upon us a trial date of March 25th, right in the middle of primary season. Very unfair. But this is exactly what the radical left Democrats wanted," Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform. "It's called election interference, and nothing like this has ever happened in our country before." Trump pleaded not guilty last month to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records related to hush money payments made during the 2016 campaign to bury allegations that he had extramarital sexual encounters. He has denied wrongdoing. Merchant said that he arrived at the March 25th trial date after discussions with Trump's lawyers and prosecutors. Trump's lawyer, Susan Nichols, said that Trump knew about the date prior to Tuesday's hearing and said that she didn't see his exasperated reaction. Trump's case is proceeding in state court, even as his lawyers seek to have it moved to federal court because some of the alleged conduct occurred while he was president. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office has until next week to file paperwork stating why it should remain in state court where the historic indictment was brought. Trump had made the New York case and the long list of other investigations into his personal, professional, and presidential conduct central to his campaign to reclaim the White House in 2024. The Republican has portrayed himself as the victim of a coordinated, politically motivated effort to sully his chances. Trump often discusses the cases at his rallies, in speeches, TV appearances, and on social media. He has reportedly attacked prosecutors, accusers, and judges by name, including Merchan, and has shown no willingness to back down, even after a recent $5 million verdict in a writer's sexual abuse and defamation lawsuit against him. The plaintiff in that case is writer E. Jean Carroll, filed a new claim Monday, seeking an additional $10 million or more to hold Trump liable for remarks he made bashing her on CNN the day after the May 9th verdict. Trump responded Tuesday by doubling down on his contention that Carroll's allegations were a fake, made-up story and a total scam, and that her case is part of the Democrats' playbook to tarnish my name and person. DeSantis' announcements is expected Tuesday on Twitter. This, of course, being Wednesday. Sources say that Florida's governor plans to declare his bid for the presidency in an online conversation with Elon Musk. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, long seen as Donald Trump's leading rival for the Republican nomination, plans to launch his 2024 presidential campaign today in an online conversation with Twitter CEO Elon Musk, according to two people with knowledge of the decision. DeSantis is an outspoken cultural conservative, will outline his plans in an evening audio event streamed on Twitter Space, according to the two people. They spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to discuss the announcement publicly. The 44-year-old two-term governor would be joining a crowded Republican contest to decide whether the party will move on from Trump in 2024. DeSantis has embraced Trump's combative style and many of his policies, but casts himself as a younger and more electable version of the former president. And that just about does it here for the reading of the Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, the 24th of May. And I am your reader, Peter Welch, and you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Reading Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. The weather is really nice today, folks, so get out there and enjoy it. Take care. We will talk again soon. So long.